Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast. Tonight's episode is episode 42 with the wonderful Victoria Olson. My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And I also have a co-host here tonight who is...
My name is Keegan Wade. You can find me on Twitter at Nageek14.
And this episode of Edu All-Stars is sponsored by TechSmith. TechSmith provides products in over 180 countries around the world with screen capture and recording software for individual and professional use. They have products like Snagit, Coach's Eye, Camtasia, TechSmith Relay, and Moray, and they're making a new commitment to help you collaborate and share across your different devices and make sure you can be productive wherever you are. I use Camtasia all the time. I use it on my blogs. I use it in my classroom. It's an amazing product, and you should definitely check it out if you're looking for something for screen capture.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars, because we'll be selecting a Twitter user who will win a Camtasia or a Snagit license, and you'll be contacted by Chris after the show. We know that you also might be listening to this after the live broadcast, which is why this week we're going to try something different and giving you an extra opportunity to win by simply leaving a comment about the show on our website, www.eduallstars.com. You can find the archives, and comments section from the homepage, and make sure to include your email address so that we can contact you. And we'll be picking a winner on Monday, April 21st. So good luck.
Perfect. So tonight we have a special guest, Victoria Olson. She's a three-four teacher and technology coach at West Langley Elementary in Langley, British Columbia. Our first Canadian to the show. She co-founded BC EdChat, EdCamp 35, and EdTech Mentorship Network to increase networking between BC educators and to enrich the focus on professional development within the province. So please welcome Victoria to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, so Victoria, what's your Twitter handle for everyone listening?
My Twitter handle is at Ms. Victoria Olson, and if you don't want to type 15 characters, then that's okay with me. I made it before I realized that there was a 140 character limit. So
what happens when you get married? What are you gonna do to your Twitter handle?
Hopefully, I marry somebody who gives me the ability to shorten that thing up.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. All right. I guess you have to change your last name too. So. So we always like to start out with a little bit of background. I just wanted to kind of talk about your background in education. How did you even get into education?
Oh, man. Okay, so when I graduated from high school, I went into secondary education was my first mode of getting into ed. And I always wanted to get into it because I liked working with people and I liked school so much. I was very into my high school and got really involved. And in my senior year of high school, I actually tore my ACL playing basketball, and I was trying to go into education on a basketball scholarship and all this stuff. So I kind of, you know, shattered dreams, right, due to sports injuries. So I kind of got into this world of physiotherapy and rehab and all that kind of stuff. And after I got into that, I kind of was like, this would be a cool field to get into. So I don't really have that altruistic story of I always wanted to be an educator because it was my calling. So after I kind of explored that avenue, I realized you have to, you know, get really good grades to be a physiotherapist. And then I got into these clinical classes and I just hated it. Like, it was the pre-physio stuff and I was just like, nope, this is not for me. So I got back into education, but by that point, I would have had to take a whole whack load of classes for my minor, and it worked out better to go into elementary. And I was like, I think I'd be okay with that. And when I started working with kids that summer in summer camps, I just loved it. And they were, excuse me, like 6 to 10-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. So I kind of knew at that point that it was the place for me. At the time, I was living in Edmonton, Alberta, which is very cold in the winter, very snowy and horrible. And I decided to move on west where it wasn't like that anymore. And got into UBC and stayed out here ever since.
Cool, that's awesome.
Yeah, and you just recently celebrated your one-year anniversary in becoming a connected educator.
Yes.
What was that process like for you choosing to connect online in the first place?
Honestly, I don't even remember how it happened. I think when I first got Twitter for like this Twitter account, I had like a Twitter account personally years ago. I don't even know if it exists anymore. And I didn't really use it. Then I realized that there was a couple educators in my district on it. I had seen like a hashtag kind of floating around at one of the professional development days in October. This was 2012. And so I decided, like, well, maybe I should get a Twitter account for my classroom and just tweet from it to update my parents. And then I quickly realized my parents weren't on Twitter at all. So yeah. I had to do something about that. So I would kind of, you know, spread the word. Still, no one really got on it. So okay, whatever. I left it alone for quite a few months, and then just one April day, I happened to sign in and I happened to see that EdChat was trending, and jumped on, and I had like. I think I said this in my post, like I might have had 30 tweets, I might have had probably the same amount of followers, maybe less, and I just went for it, right? I just kind of saw these people talking about education. I'm like, hey, I can identify, these are my people, right? Like, this is so cool. And I just jumped in and started learning, and that very same day I started my blog, because I don't know if you're familiar with Sam Patterson, he's out in California.
Yeah,
he runs
the
Patui chat. Mm-hmm. That chat used to back to back on EdChat, and they were talking about blogging that afternoon. And so I just started my blog, and I just went in head first. So a lot of folks actually, you know, lurk in the background for quite a while and before they post and things like that. And I just found the world and went for it. And I was very prolific for the first while. Like I would say almost, you know, almost obsessed, because I was so excited about the fact that I could just get anything I wanted to learn for free.
Yeah.
And, so I was definitely just bringing in as much PD for myself as I could. I learned about a ton of things, learned a lot in the summertime, and it just one thing led to another. All my opportunities in my present world right now have happened because of Twitter.
It's funny you mentioned like taking a risk and jumping in head first. Like it seems like every single person we've talked to, we've never really talked about this on the show, but they all have been that way. It's like I just jump in and like whatever happens, happens. I'm that way. I know Todd teaches that way, and I know that all the other educators that we've talked on here, they're kind of all like built from the same pattern where it's just like, hey, let's try it out, and if we fail, well, you know, we'll move on to something else. That's interesting that we all kind of have that same mold, you know.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I've been having conversations with Bill Selleck about this. He's out in California, too. We met at Q. And he's just this cool guy. And we're talking about putting together places where we can share those stories to encourage others to, you know, tell the stories of failure and tell the stories of attempting innovation in their classroom, or even attempting a different style of pedagogy, right? Like, I think a lot of people come towards teaching in the way that they were taught, and I think it's important to try those new things and, you know, fall on your face sometimes and own it in front of your kids, too.
Yeah, I think that would be an awesome project. I'd totally be interested in either writing for that or, you know, just reading that for sure. That would be, because I know we're all kind of the same way. It's just like, whatever. So from that journey, you know, of kind of being a connected educator, you also founded VC EdCheck. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
And that one was, you know, I always thought there should be some kind of provincial representation. You kind of go down to the states and you see all of these different states have their own ed chats, and you're, you know, you get involved in some of them, but it's not really exactly tailored to your, you know, your district or your region or whatever. And one day we were on, I was on a chat, I think it was 21st Ed Chat, and I was talking to a guy who actually lives 15 minutes away from me, and he's like, yeah, like, we don't have a chat in BC. I said, why don't we start one? So he goes, okay, we'll start one. And we just started working together and putting together documents and talking to folks that have started state ed chats and things like that. I've actually written a blog post about how to start a state ed chat or how to start an ed chat. And it was a really cool journey, because you got to see this chat. And at the beginning, what I find is the audience you're searching for isn't always the first people to follow, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So we wanted BC educators, but BC educators might not have known me, they might not have known Bryn, my co-mod, and they might not know about it at all because it just started. But all the people that were watching in the summertime, mostly Americans, were coming to our BC Ed Chat and supporting what it was that we wanted to start. And eventually, as you know, time went on, that decreased and the BC engagement increased. So now we have probably 80% representation of BC educators as opposed to the beginning, I think we had maybe 30. So, oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, so it was pretty cool. Now we have 4 co-mods. We're looking for more because we're all busy. Like, I'm in my master's program right now, and one of our others is in the a doctorate program and a school's trustee, and we have an administrator, and we have another teacher out from the island now that are all co-mods. So they're fabulous. I couldn't work without my team, and any project that I do now, I just base it on team, like building a good team around yourself to support you.
And what day of the week do you do the chat on?
That's Sunday night at 7 p.m., and the hashtag is BCEdChat.
Cool.
All right, and you also started the EdTech Mentorship Network. What is that?
It was definitely a team effort. So this is a program that is created by teachers throughout the province of British Columbia. We were brought together just through social media and different people connecting us. And what it is, it's just a network where people can come utilize free PD that might not necessarily be on Twitter, and we have been working with the Ministry of Education to get this okayed by our Deputy Minister of Education. So what we've been looking at, talking to superintendents to get representatives from each and every district in British Columbia so that those people are tapped into the, you know, what's going on, what's current, free learning. We do a podcast as well, actually. So I run a podcast once a month where we just outline a tech tool, and it can be anything from, you know, digital bookmarking to Erasmus to Google tools to whatever. And we also have now a website that we're drafting. It's just in draft form, so it's really rough still, but there's a couple folks that are working on that, and they're just trying to bring in things that then districts aren't reinventing the wheel. So for example, I'm sure you guys, maybe you've heard about it, I'm not sure, but privacy policies are a really big deal in British Columbia because we have like the most stringent privacy laws. We're not supposed to be using cloud technology based outside of the country for personal information, such as, you know, if a child has an IEP or evaluative information or, you know, their personal education numbers or medical histories or things like that. So we have to work around those things quite a bit because we can't use clouds based in America. We have to use clouds based inside of Canada.
Okay.
Yes. But there are ways around, like taking a look at the content that you're putting on the cloud and things like that. So maybe one district, I think Surrey School District, has developed this fantastic use policy that now all the other districts can just play with that language, but they don't have to reinvent that. So that would be an example of something that's shared on the network so that other districts can take advantage. Another thing would be like just even the podcast, like saying, okay, here we have, this is how you can use Google tools. And then somebody might come and say, oh, well, this is how we use Google tools in X district. And then they could share that information out. And then the other people would just tweak it to make it their own.
So you kind of hit on some of the privacy issues. What are some other like major differences you notice between the Canada education system and the U.S. education system?
Testing?
Okay, yeah, it's the standardized testing for sure. You guys don't do that, or?
Not in the same way. No bubble sheet mania here. Like, I mean.
Oh, wow.
We have, okay, so I was, I like I said, I went to Q14 this year, had the opportunity to go down and just hang out with awesome educators for pretty much a week, almost, and, you know, just having these conversations with folks about what they have to do was really, really eye-opening. So I'm not sure if you know Nicole D'Alessio, her name is Megrella Canella on Twitter. She's really awesome, and we had a conversation. I said, Nicole, how many tests do you have to administer to your kids every year? And she goes, too many. And I said, you know, and in my head, I'm thinking, okay, like 5? Is that whatever? She's like, oh, no, like way more than that. So I'm thinking, I've administered 1 test to my grade 4 students, and that's the functional standardized assessment, which is delivered in grade 4 and 7. So that test takes a look at reading, writing, math, and it just kind of gives a ballpark of information about where kids are at. And I mean, like, I don't agree with it. I still don't think it's the best method to assess kids, especially because I might not teach in the way the test is delivered. I might not look at the content that's in the test at all, to be frank. Like, I'm not really big on curriculum, but
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. It was just eye-opening to talk to these educators that are constrained and confined by scores.
Totally driven by.
Yeah, and they're evaluated on it. That's just right. Sick and wrong to me. Yeah. So that's number one. Definitely, we focus a lot more on competencies. So the new BC curriculum's coming out, which I actually am a fan of, to a degree. I think the competency-based soft skills that it's focusing on are more important to look at as a broad spectrum, because before you'd have, you know, skills and processes in social studies, and it would be, you know, student can design a research project. But that's not just a social studies outcome. That's something that you can tie into any subject area. So it should be an overarching, like, can they do this in X, Y, and Z? And then you can tie it to those specific subject areas and content areas if you want.
Maybe I need to move to Canada.
we're not there yet. I think the problem is all of these things get proposed and then we don't have the funding to back them up as far as support. Yeah. You know, so it looks pretty on the outside, and it's packaged nicely, but I think the ongoing support is one of the most pivotal pieces that needs to be happening when these kinds of changes are rolled out in education.
Cool. So you also kind of talked about some tech tools that you used in class earlier. Do you have any specific tech tools that you kind of, like, are hot on right now or just, like, are you, like, really into?
I'm definitely a Google fangirl, especially lately. It's just been so awesome to work with my kids. And even hearing, when you hear an 8-year-old say, let's open and share a Google Doc, you're like, okay, that's wicked. So they understand what the tools can be used for and how they can be used. They understand that they can share them with me and that we can have conversations and I can give them feedback, which is really fun. And I use all of this in the context of the Daily 5 program. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Explain it.
No. Oh, okay. The Daily 5 is basically a set of, you know, language arts activities that kids should be doing every day. So an example would be reading to yourself. You should be able to read every single day and, you know, be able to pick a book that fits the best with your abilities and being able to self-assess and understand, like, when you don't understand what's happening in the story. You need to be able to identify when you don't know all the words on the page and stuff like that. So you switch and fit things according to what you need as opposed to what level you should be at for where you are in your grade. So I'm not just giving a book to a kid and saying, okay, well, this is level N, and you have to read this because you're in March, right, in grade 3 or whatever. They get to kind of personalize that a bit, and then I do recommendations based on how they're assessed. So it's really formative. It really helps me to personalize curriculum, and it allows them to have choice within a structured parameter. So they have this little box they live in, but they can kind of go wherever they want in the little box, and I kind of help guide them to, you know, pushing those edges out a little bit. So Google tools fit really well in there because they can share easily. And another app that I use a lot is Explain Everything. And I use it to get my kids to self-assess, especially their own reading. So my kids will record their reading, and then they'll go back and listen to it. And after they listen to it, it gives them an idea of fluency, expression, so on, and whether they've, you know, identified the words correctly, you know, decoding and then comprehension. So being able to listen to something after you've already read it is totally different experience than if you just read it once.
So do you have devices in your classroom? Are these like BYOD devices, or how does that work?
I have access to devices at the beginning of the, it's changed all year because we've been doing, like, as you can imagine, every pilot that happens runs through my class pretty much first.
Yeah, right.
So as the tech coach, that's kind of how it happens. So I started off the year with, I think I had 8 iPads at the beginning of the year, then that turned into 12, which was very welcome because I had 24 kids. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we worked with that probably until, oh gosh, like a month ago. And then I gave up 3 of my iPads to have access to 10 Chromebooks as well. And we have access to them. I mean, like, we share them with another pod. So, like, we have a pod of classes of 3 classes, and those devices go between those 3. But I have access to them most of the time. Mm. So the Chromebooks are in my room probably 50% of the time. And then our 10 iPads still, sorry, 9 iPads, I think, remain in the classroom all the time. So we kind of have access to them whenever we want because nobody really takes our iPads, but the Chromebooks are kind of They're now a jewel, a hidden jewel in the school, and some people are finding out that they exist.
Yeah, I know. I love mine, and like when someone asks to use them, I'm like, no, go away.
But, yeah, I know. yeah, I know. It's so awful. And sometimes I have these lesson ideas that I just want to try right there, and I can't because I don't have them. But I mean, you know, that's what a normal teacher runs into, and I need to. I'm flexible and respect that. And if I have my colleagues, you know, asking to use a tool that I've been pressuring them to use, then I have to be happy with that.
Yeah. And kind of shifting gears here. I know that on your blog and other platforms, you mentioned giving your students more of a voice in your classroom. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little more of like what that looks like and what that involves?
Yes. So at the very beginning of the school year, I very purposefully set up very bad social structures in the classroom. You know, like, here's the classroom jobs, and here's who's going to do the classroom jobs, and tomorrow you can pick whoever you want to do the next job. And as you can imagine, the pecking order of the room becomes, well, I didn't get a turn, and, you know, Johnny's gotten a turn 4 times, and I didn't. And, you know, you just get this really emotional feeling of, you know, this doesn't work, and then we have to break down why it didn't work. So I run something called class, it's just a class meeting, it's nothing special, but the way that it's framed is through Robert's Rules of Orders, which is really old school. It's kind of like this thing that just brings this amazing order and governance to the structure. And it allows the kids to actually discuss and talk about their issues while kind of demanding, just because of the way Robert's Rules of Order works, it demands the respects of your peers so that they have to hear out your voice whether or not they disagree. Mm-hmm. So, and in this way, my kids have made rules and taken what I've built and restructured it and reframed it. And sometimes they have ideas that I didn't even think of. Like, so this is the silly example, but we have these 4 comfy chairs in my classroom, and you know everybody wants to sit on the comfy chairs at silent reading time. Yeah. And these are the things that are important in the life of an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old, right? So, of course, these are, you know, a hot commodity. Everyone's fighting over them, so we have to make a rule around it. How are we going to do it? And so they split themselves up into groups of 4, and so whoever is, you know, running the classroom that day, we call it the VIP, but whoever happens to be the leader in the classroom that day, that group of 4 kids gets the chairs that day, whatever group they're in. So they just came up with this idea, and I'm like, that's awesome. I wouldn't have organized it that way. But no way.
I wouldn't even have thought of that.
That's awesome.
So it's cool because I get to listen to what's concerning them. And it's simple stuff often, but sometimes they come up with these things that I'm just, you know, I shake my head and I'm hearing a grade 3 say, well, there, you know, I hear what you're saying and that's cool, but there's another side to this and you need to take, you know, they start looking at other points of view and perspectives, and it's really neat to see that thinking develop.
See, Keegan, you just need to go back to your school tomorrow and just take it over. Take over all the comfy chairs, come up with new norms about your teachers.
Yeah, I'll be the VIP of the school. I like
there you
it.
Go. VIP Keegan Wade.
Yeah, I just don't know how that works in high school, but
there's probably some fist fights over that.
If you hack it, I want to hear about it.
All right. I'll let you know.
Yeah. So, Victoria, if someone were to describe you in 3 words, what were the 3 words that you would hope they would use?
Oh, gosh. See, this is the question everyone dreads in an
interview. Yeah, you're like,
prepare for it. Genuine. I really strive to be very genuine. Ambitious. Like, I don't think that's I don't, and in a good way. Some people view ambitious as a bad term. And I think collaborative, I think would be one of the ones that I would want to be described as.
I think you're the first person that's kept it to their 3 words. I think generally we've got people saying sentences. I'm like, no, we said words, but.
Canadians follow rules, so.
Yeah, there you go. That's the rule followers up there.
So, what's a great book or blog that you're reading right now that you'd recommend to others, or maybe one of each?
Can I mention a book I just read?
Sure.
And I'm in my master's, so I often do not read for fun. I will tell you that because I can't. I read like, oh, here's this fantastic research paper from 2007 that's severely out of date, but it's about Ed. So whatever. Kristen Swanson and Hadley Ferguson just wrote a book that just came out. It's called Student Superpowers, and it's really, really good. It links Common Core and the Common Core curriculum to teaching with technology and how to best get your students connected and the skills that they need. And it discusses, I talked about, those soft skills. It talks about those soft skills a lot and how you can bring those into the curriculum that exists. So if especially for teachers that are struggling with finding the ways to integrate student-centered types of pedagogy, it's got some great lessons. It's got explanations about why it's important to connect, why it's important to collaborate, and so on. And it's just so well laid out. I can't recommend it enough.
Cool. Any blogs that you read, like, religiously?
Religiously? That's
or
a really...
like all the time. That's a strong word. I went strong on you there. Like, how about, do you read once a week, maybe? Or just kind of all over the place. That's how I am. I don't read it. I don't subscribe to anybody. I just kind of, when I see it, I go read it, you know, on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, that's usually me. I have to say that I typically go that route. I do have like a feed reader set up, but I don't really use it anymore, and it's probably like I probably have thousands of posts behind now. My admin is really fabulous. I would actually recommend his blog is leadershipwithpurpose.net, and I encouraged him to get into the world of blogging because he has a school blog and he has maintained it for quite some time, where we celebrate five or six things, you know, in the week that are positive at school. But I said, you know, why aren't you blogging? Like, why aren't you sharing some of the things you do or your perspective on education? Because he's very progressive and he's very open to allowing us to have autonomous, you know, actions in our classroom and work with kids and take risks. And that's really encouraged. So we're highly supported by him. And he just, reading his reflections has been really, really awesome because I get to see we have these conversations face-to-face, but it's just nice to see him sharing and modeling that way of leadership. I think that's really what a lot of school culture should feel like.
Is an admin, like, it's a principal? Is that what?
Yes.
Like what
it,
okay, cool.
Yeah, sorry.
Administrator. Cool. Yeah. No worries. So thinking back to, like, when you first started teaching, like, what piece of advice would you give yourself, like, stuff that you know now that you wish that you would have known, like, right when you started?
I think the hardest thing to learn was where to find things. And you know, now we say, you know, Twitter is the way to go, but because I'm a technology coach, I work with so many people that have no idea what they're doing. And I recently got a teacher on Twitter in my building, and we got to spend, because I got a day of release to work with her. And, you know, we sat down and I really got to sit with her for like an hour and a half and just do Twitter. Right. And, you know, she says, well, I really want to learn about, you know, self-regulated behavior with kids. And I'm like, okay, you can't just go hashtag self-regulated behavior with kids, right? But that's what she wanted to do. And so it's important to know where to look. And so when you point someone to a document like the Twitter chat list, okay, suddenly it becomes easier to find something that you're looking for. You know, so those kind of things, or even when you're thinking, man, I really, like, really want to learn how to use, you know, Google Scripts. You know, who knows about Google Scripts? And, you know, then you have to know who in your PLN, like, which person are you looking for to help with that. So creating that network was really important for me, and I feel like that would be the one thing I would have told myself much earlier. Like, if I could have tapped into any network, whether it's a local network in my district or a global network like Twitter, I just think having resources in humans and in stuff is important.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Now, summing it all up, what's been the most exciting outcome you've seen since all of this began?
Oh man, there's a lot. I mean, like, just getting to go to a conference like Q14, like, this is really fresh, but it's, you know, it's a couple weeks ago. And just getting to present and share and just be present with these amazing educators, people I look up to, people who I feel, like, when I'm in the room, I'm like, I'm out of their league. Why am I here with these people? And I think it's really cool just to get to listen to their conversations, and every once in a while you put your two cents in, and, you know, they look at you weird because you're, like, I do have a different perspective from Canada, like, I really do, but when you're in these circles, you just learn so much, and you just learn about the different kinds of people, and while I might have different perspectives, like, we're all at the core really similar, Sure. And I think that's what I've learned about education is all the struggles that we have in our classrooms and when we get stuck or with that student we just can't reach and we've been trying for months. I think all of those things come back together and we all have that sameness and that's what it all comes back to. So those opportunities have been incredible and definitely wouldn't trade them. And I get to travel a lot now. I would like to thank UBC for helping me fund some of these little vacations because if I present at conferences, they will actually back some of my travel, which is really neat.
Oh, very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah, I saw lots of pictures of you guys from Q14 with, like, John Samuelson was there. I know I saw lots of selfies with you guys and all that, just hanging out, having a good time. So, yeah, I talked to him after the fact, and he said you guys had a really good time out there. But we just really want to thank you for coming on to Edu All Stars. Super appreciative, and, you know, I've been following you for quite some time on Twitter, and it's just really fun to get to talk to you finally face-to-face. I feel like, you know, we tweet back and forth every once in a while and whatever. It's always fun to get to talk to someone face-to-face and just get to know them a little better. So
yeah,
if you ever need anything from me, let me know, and I will definitely be reaching out to you for, you know, things as well. So I want to talk about a couple of – yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just said thank you.
So I just want to talk about a couple ways you can connect with us. You can follow us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ, and our hashtag we use is EduAllStars. Also, we're going to be having the contest on the website. You can comment for the next week, and we'll announce a winner on Monday the 21st. We'll just pick a random person in the comment section. Just pick a takeaway from tonight, and we're going to be giving away a Camtasia or a Snagit license for that. Also want to thank TechSmith for providing those licenses. They've been a sponsor for the last month and really appreciative of that. You can find the website at eduallstars.com. You can search out EduAllStars on iTunes. Just type in EduAllStars, you'll find us.
Yeah, and join us for two interviews next week. One on Monday, April 21st at 7:30 Central Standard Time. We'll have Deanna Jump, who's the...
Deanna Jump. Yeah,
thank you. I'm a little fuzzy on that. But she's the highest-earning teacher on Teachers Pay Teachers. And then on Wednesday, the 23rd, at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, we will have John Fritzky come on.
Yeah, we really just wanted to thank TechSmith for the last month, and hope everyone has a good evening. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.